Censorship is the idea that you and I cannot communicate lovingly and safely, that we cannot build communities, common unity, through love, open-heartedness and good faith. Football is not like censorship. Football is nice. Can you believe it that the England 21s won this weekend? What a glory it is to be an English person at a time like this. Did you watch that game, Gal?
Brilliant. It was nerve-wracking because Spain are a technically very good side, without getting too deep into the football analysis. But yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. It was great to see there was a lot of English under 21 players who we like recognise from Premier League clubs.
Did the crowd sound different? You know how sometimes like, the crowd sounds different at like women's football or young people football? It sounds a bit like
well, it sounded
not right.
Different because it wasn't very full. That was one of the worst things about it is I was watching it thinking, where's everyone and why aren't there more fans here? And why is there such a big distinction between the senior team and the under-21s? Because it's an amazing achievement. As I said, Spain very good. Lots of regular first team starters in the Spanish team.
Because like in American sport, they love it when they're still at college, don't they?
Right, it's mad. The college game in America is huge.
Like, everyone's just at school. They're watching schoolboys doing basketball and schoolboys doing football. Like, they don't mind. They're like, that's all right. They're good enough.
Yeah.
And if they're old enough, they're good enough. That's what they say, ain't it?
It is. And I bet that has an impact on, you know, the whole culture of the game and the way in which we always talk about how brilliant the draft system is in America.
Yeah.
And what a shame it is that we have to rely on ever-increasing massive transfers over here when they've got an amazing system in America.
It must be weird to have been watching, like, to have someone, like, playing for the Chicago Bulls or the New York Giants, depending on the sport. I know those are different sports. Like, and think, I've known them since I was a little lad.
Yes.
Like, I've been watching him when I was a little lad.
Yeah.
Sort of amazing to me. Do you remember, like, during COVID, when they show football on the TV, English football, they used to, like, you could choose whether to watch it with crowd noise or not.
That's right.
I didn't bother with crowd noise. I didn't watch it. I just listened to normal, like, I want to hear people, like, on the sidelines. Yeah, people going, oh, bloody hell!
Like that.
I like being able to hear all that stuff. And I don't want to hear generic crowd noise like from a computer game. Where
I
people...
actually did.
Did you?
I put on crowd noise.
You comforted yourself.
I missed it so much.
I missed it. Like, you're like Gaza sleeping with a vacuum cleaner on.
Very similar.
You are. Like, some people can't sleep unless there's a vacuum cleaner on. Let me know about that in the chat. Some people, they can't even have a nice sleep unless there's a vacuum cleaner on. I think of all the things I heard about Gaza, climbing over people's fences, going through people's fridges in the middle of the night, the thing that's been maddest to learn is he could then off I go to the land and on out like a light he is once then with the Uber. So is it just the noise that Gaz was you? I hope you ain't got none of the attachments.
Well, exactly.
You don't want to be misusing
eyes,
Henry.
It's the eyes.
Staring at what you looking at me like that for, Henry? What the hell are you looking
Henrietta
at?
Henrietta now. Yeah. Even more dangerous.
What about the baby one?
Oh, no.
They're all vacuum cleaners, not people.
Nevertheless.
Well, all right, what if it's a baby one?
No.
But it's 10 years, like, it's older than the new. Ah, listen, it's complicated territory, but football is nice.
And they're trafficking vacuum cleaners now.
Oh, my God. We've made a film about trafficking vacuum cleaners. You far-right lunatic. These Henry Hoovers have been trafficked. I met a Henry Hoover over at the border. Oh, Gaza, you're meant to be investigating the case. I couldn't fucking help it, man. As soon as I hear it, I go out like a fucking late.
It had a little badge on it saying Gaza.
My favourite. Oh, nice. That's a good reference to this moment in our over the course of the week when we've been speaking to the Sound of Freedom filmmakers and Jesus actor Jim Caviezel and Tim Ballard, the real life geezer. Well, like, he's Jesus actor. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't think. Call him that. He likes it. Yeah. What else was I going to say?
Anyway, so well done them. Well done the England under-21s. Yeah, yeah. That's brilliant.
What about West Ham? We won the Youth FA Cup. Are you going to say well done to West Ham?
Yeah, well done. No, but it's at international level. It's amazing to me the disparity between people who just don't know that England won a major trophy. If it was literally some of those players were just like a year older, or some of those players could still be playing for the England under-21s.
Yeah.
But if it was the senior competition, it would make such a difference. It's strange to me.
Yeah, but that's what football is about. It's about hierarchies and about distinction. And about boundaries. You can't make people care. You can't just force people to care.
No.
I'm wearing this little jacket now to celebrate that we're doing football is nice, and we've gone to the trouble of putting that there and that there. So I think we should acknowledge that you're wearing that Hull City shirt, and I'm wearing this. Gareth's going to be talking to one of his great heroes, Phil Brown, legendary Hull manager, Bolton assistant manager. He's beloved in, what is the, Hull's basically Yorkshire.
It's Yorkshire, yeah.
You think what you want, but it's part of Yorkshire, isn't it?
Yeah, there was a bit of time when we were Humberside, but we're back to East Yorkshire now.
Yorkshire itself is a confusing place.
Yeah.
They're confusing people, aren't they? Aren't they, the Yorkshire people?
We are.
They like that tea and everything.
That's right.
They're odd. Okay, let's have a look
at... tea.
Yeah, let's have a look at... I mean, it's all stolen from India, is the truth. Let's have a look at our most British thing. Where did you get it? It's out of your business. Yorkshire, I think. sir? No, no. Right, let's have a look at whether or not West Ham United, my beloved football club, are going to buy any players. Young Jack's gone to the trouble of making a graphic. Those of you that have been following Bad Graphics Jack's work will be expecting a minor atrocity right now. Let's see if he delivers. Oh, that was very nice. He kind of made that. That's
very
Bad
good.
Graphics Jack's gone on the offensive, isn't he?
He is very good.
He's actually saved his best work.
Did he do that graphic? Did he do the
shirt change?
He can't
have done the Declan, no chance.
There's no way Jack did that.
He's not got them stones.
Not a
chance. I bet he struggled to make that little watermark in the corner. I bet he's been up 36 hours doing that logo. Right, my name's Bad Graphics Jack. I'll bloody own it. I'll reclaim it like the C word or the N word. There, I've reclaimed it. I owns my Bad Graphics.
Well done, Jack.
He certainly does own Bad Graphics. He's the king of them. Meanwhile, we've got lovely footage of a US commentator inadvertently.
Hang on. So West Ham, they're not getting anyone.
We're not getting anyone.
Is that the news?
I want that lad out of Ajax, whose name I can't say.
Okay.
He's a midfielder.
Right.
I want James Ward-Prowse out of James's club, Southampton.
Right.
And I want Harvey Barnes, but it looks like he's going to go to Newcastle.
It does
now
look like he's going to Newcastle.
It's not fair. We're going to end up spending the Declan money.
Yeah.
Yesterday.
Sorry.
No, do remember your point, because we'll need it. But like I said to my, by God, we'll need it. But I went to my mate yesterday, he's an Arsenal fan, and he just at the end went, thanks for Declan.
Yes.
Like after, and I'd been talking about other stuff.
Hey, listen.
Emotions and things.
Welcome to my world, thanks. Thanks for
I've
Jared
been in
Bowen.
Your world.
Thanks for Jared Bowen.
Did I say things like that?
Every West Ham fan that I know, cheers for Jared Bowen, by the way. When he came, I remember saying to all the West Ham fans, he's bloody good, he's bloody good.
And you did say that.
Unconvinced, unconvinced.
You did say that.
But
you did say that. Some people feel like his neck might be too thick.
But that's not a thing, though, is it? I mean, yes, maybe it is, but...
That's what pumps up people's concern is. All right, but why don't you, like, I think if we don't get Harvey Barnes, and we don't get James Ward-Prowse, and we don't get Ajax, lad, I'm going to be upset. And if we don't get some sort of forward from Italy, I'm going to be upset. He's got 20 goals in Serie A.
Right.
I'll be upset. I want something. I want something
every time
to cheer
you
me
do
up.
Get an Italian striker, it doesn't
Scaramaccia,
really, doesn't
don't work,
really
out.
Work out. They put Antonio back in the end.
Oh, should we try someone other? Nah, put Antonio back. It's like you with a thumbnail. Come on. Try this thing. It's foreign. Oh, don't like it. Put Antonio back in.
They do have an issue with strikers. West Ham. I mean, Antonio used
we
to
we ain't
be...
had someone score 20 goals since
right.
like Frank McAvenny.
Well,
or Tony
Antonio
Cotty.
Started as a left back or something, and then West Ham were just like, well, none of the strikers are working.
Ray
so
Stewart? Stewart Pearce does the fullbacks. Yeah, the fullbacks who are good at penalties often are our top scorers.
Yeah.
We ain't had someone... I think did even Dean Ashton get 20 goals? Who was the last West Ham striker to score? Get Bad Graphics
Defoe,
Jack to
maybe?
Do that.
I don't know.
Defoe.
Payet probably got 20, did
no.
he, when he was then? He wasn't a striker
not
either.
Not in the season.
No.
Not in the league.
I don't know.
And he's a midfielder.
Wow, a long time ago.
All right, while someone looks up that fact about Bad Graphics Jack, if he can stop building his CV, let's have a look at this US commentator sort of graduating in Mickey Mouse over the course of a goal. Let's have
still with it on the right side, stepping over, sending it back for Lindsay. Lindsay sends it back into the area for Svidersky. One touch, he scores! Another one for Svidersky! And that one was more impressive than the first!
They stayed in that
That's
register for too long.
Like, far too long.
You can still go, oh, goal! Like that and go there for a
and
minute.
Then, but
back to
the goal.
Don't stay there. Oh, man. Actually, I like it here. Hey, I'm going to stay like this for the rest of my life. Woohoo! They lived in it.
They lived in it.
He did that voice. Thought, no, that's me now. Yeah. Don't you ever think you could change your whole personality?
Yes, all the time.
This is one that I could be. Oh, hello. Yes, I could just be sort of like this. It would be really easy to just sort of fall into this. And it's sort of relaxing to just to sort of step through words very quietly like that and sort of be very meticulous.
Would you commit to doing that at least one day a week for the team? The team would appreciate it, I think, just for one day a week.
Because rather than the sort of swivel-eyed Rasputin, very intensely caring,
sure,
and then suddenly cold. I tell you now that Stevie G,
yes,
has gone from Rangers to Villa to Etifak FC. Now, we have to be careful that we're not sort of xenophobic,
yeah,
about like clubs abroad, but he does sort of look a bit like a dictator sat behind that desk. I think it's because of the fringes on them flags.
Mm.
They're a bit fringy, aren't,
yes,
they?
There's
a bit too much. They're a bit too 1970s porn when they need to be 2000s porn.
Right.
They need a waxing.
I see.
Is what I'm saying, those flags. They're a bit fringy around the... Do we say mingy?
I don't think we do.
Not anymore. Stevie G, he's gone. Is he going to be all right over there? Do you think?
I think he'll probably be absolutely fine, won't he?
I just remembered I went on holiday.
Right.
Like over the summer, I didn't have a very nice time.
Yeah.
I had to come home early. I was often happens to be on holidays.
You should not go on holidays.
I don't like holidays.
Never go on one. Every time you say to me, I'm going on holiday, I think, well, it'll be back in a couple of days.
All right, come home. Didn't like it. Why? There's nothing to do.
It's because you don't really have autonomy when you go on a holiday.
You're just stuck there on holiday.
Autonomy for you is like the main thing in your life.
It's the only thing I care about, isn't
yeah,
it?
Autonomy.
Autonomy. Freedom. Absolute freedom at any point.
You're going to be in this room. You can only go to that place. That's where you'll eat. Those are limited options.
Get me out of this shithole. So like I went to Dubai and he was there. Gerard, was he negotiating his deal?
Oh.
I mean, I know Dubai ain't Saudi Arabia, but maybe it's a stop off point.
Right. Did you play a part in it, do you think?
He was there. He was at another hotel and right. I chatted to these scousers at our hotel.
Yeah.
Which was one of the reasons. I'm only joking. I love the people of Liverpool. But like I was like, we see Stevie G the other day. You know, he was nice as pie. I was chatting to him and I was like, yeah, where is he? And we see him over at the buffet. I was like, oh, wicked. I'll go check him out. Anyway, perhaps he was over there. I went to...
Did you go to the buffet? I can't imagine you.
I did actually. It's a bloody good buffet. Yeah, it's good though.
Was it
ain't like a buffet at like pizza. It's pizza out or nothing.
Right.
Like you've got whole areas
right.
And it's spot on.
What do you mean areas?
Like, right, Italy area.
Oh, I see, right.
And then like
there's
fish
little
food.
Flags on it. Like that.
It looks like that. If he'd been there, it would have been that. So imagine some linguine in front of him. Yeah, what do you want? Like, here, have that, pal. Do you want to go over there to the pizza section? There's like fish food section,
yeah, okay.
Or like seafood. It's not fish food, because that's just like them dust. Fish, they can't cope, can they? A couple too many specks. That's it. I'm out. four specks. I can't. One speck. Lovely. Two specks. Three specks. Oh, you idiots. Stop eating. So the buffet, yeah, there's, you know, different continental foods anyway.
Right.
You can really go for it.
Right.
You can actually mess yourself up. And then the whole dessert area,
wow.
You know, that's the nature of a Dubai holiday.
You're very good around desserts, I've noticed.
I can't do it. I have to stay away.
You're
I just
out.
Get addicted.
It's unbelievable.
I have to.
I've watched you around them recently.
Look, a cheesecake could finish me off.
Right.
That's, you know, which is better than finishing off in a cheesecake, I'll tell you that. Right? Right? The other thing that happened is I went to the Wet Wildy.
Sorry?
I went to the Wet Wildy water park. It's too beige. It's a water park, but everything's a bit too beige.
Right.
Like the pipes
right.
are too beige.
Is that because it's, like, old?
Yeah, it's too old.
Right.
And, like, as you know, Muslim women will wear a burqa swimming costume.
Mm.
So they're wearing swimming, but it's what's weird is we all know what a water park is in the kind of cultures, sort of like, you know, I'm guessing, I don't know you, do you live in America? Do you live in Canada? Our data suggests, not that we look at your individual data, but collectively, you're Anglophonic.
Only when we sell it.
Only when we bundle that up. Nice. We don't bundle it up. We don't do that.
No.
Most of yous are in America or Australia or Canada or UK, right? That's basically and all of us know what a theme park is in our countries. When you go Wet Wildy theme park, you think I'm not saying it right, don't you?
I do,
why
actually.
Don't you just come clean and own up that you think I'm not saying Wet Wildy?
Well, because you say words strangely.
I don't.
You say tomorrow, for example.
Tomorrow. Like, Wet Wildy, look it up, right? Wet Wildy. I bet you can find a trailer for it on YouTube. I went Wet Wildy, and like, it's like a normal water park theme park, except you can have a thing where you get your feet nibbled by a fish.
In a water park?
There's a foot nibbled by a fish section. I ain't even joking.
Do they tell you that that's happening? Because otherwise
you have to pay
be
extra.
Terrified.
You pay extra. That's not included in the cover price.
Right.
You go in. Oh, this is amazing. Do you want your feet nibbled by a fish? Yes, I do. It's extra.
Right.
Sit down over here.
So it's not like you come off a water slide and into a pool and then you're suddenly attacked.
There's some areas, right, where the people... It's weird because it feels adjacent to a disaster. Like, because you're sort of in these rubber rings floating around and there's people that work there. And because they don't also, the people, I feel like a lot of people may have come from African nations to work there. They are not using the typical set of customary facial expressions that we would associate with a theme park worker.
Yeah.
Like if you meet someone at Disney World or Six Flags or even Chessington World of Adventures, there's this wild waddy. Yeah, what did I call it? Wet wildy. Yeah, wild waddy. Like you know, there's a sort of a, like, hello, sort of, there's a chirpiness.
That's right.
There's a sort of a cultural chirpiness. Now, remember, this is not a Western country, Dubai, and those people are not from Dubai either. So there's it's unrecognisable. The aesthetically, look at it. That's what wet wildy looked like.
Wow.
It's a bit scary.
It is very beige.
Then I get that what you get in wet wildy is the worst kind of recognised for a famous person. The worst kind of recognised is... Like, recognize you, and then you have to tell them who you are. I hate that kind of recognized. Leave me alone.
How does that go, then, in reality?
Excuse me? Oh, who are you? Okay. Fuck off.
Well, you know what you need to do then?
Fuck off. I'm Johnny Depp.
You need to bring out your other personality.
I don't know. I'm no one. Leave me be. I'm just trying to enjoy wet wildy. I'm just trying to have a nice time.
I've got fish eating my feet.
It's a fish eating my feet, sir. Sorry, that isn't one of the options here. Is that a video of it or is that just a still of it? When we're over there, they recognised me and they wanted to talk to me and everything. Oh, look, here's a video of wet wildy. And then we'll have a look at some Hull news. And then we're going to meet one of Gail's great heroes, Phil Brown. Let's have a look at wet wildy. They're trying a Disney font there.
Yeah.
That's sort of like a sort of Disney-ish font. Look at them W's, Disney-ish. Yep. Sometimes it gets a bit too cold and you get a bit depressed.
I will say, it's not very good this, is it? Well, all the money they're spending on Premier League players, you'd think they'd have more budget for this.
Invest a bit in your...
They've used the same kid on about three or four different
shots. I'm sick and tired of seeing this kid. What, are they going to see this kid in a moustache in a minute? Come down the slide.
Up some stairs.
I'm just going downstairs now. That kid, I've seen him 10 times. Our hotel backed on it. That was good, that wave machine. I didn't have a go at that. Why are they not showing the fish? They're not featuring that, are they?
No. I think the fish were a mistake all along.
I think that's an infestation.
Oh, and here you can...
Also, wouldn't you like to have these rats scurrying about, laying eggs in your hair? Rats lay eggs? Oh, shit.
You've got to pay extra.
Okay. There you go. I don't even know what this stuff is. Give it to Stevie.
Look, there's that kid.
Whoa, again? This is about my video. They're too close up, aren't they? You want a feature. There were better things. It weren't as bad as this.
You're actually now moved from I didn't enjoy myself to it was better than this.
Even though it was bad, it's not as bad as they're making it look. Wet waddy. That's the stuff. That's me. I was in one of them. And I felt like a bit like, you know, that film about a tsunami, like where it's Ewan McGregor and he gets separated from his family. I felt a bit like him.
Oh, yeah, very similar. Yeah. Yeah. They should have got you to play that, really, because of your real life experience at Wet Waddy.
I tell you, you know, Ewan, when he's in that film where you lost your family, that's a bit like my experience at Wet Waddy. Like, I got separated, not long, but from my wife. We got separated from one of my daughters and my missus.
Yeah,
and
it's then, not like, the same thing, Russell.
We was going down a brown tube. I go, then now, come back. You're still all right. Do you remember us? It's us lot, look. It was only half an hour ago. I just went to get my foot nibbled by a fish. Got a bit of the old dry fish, foot skin nibbled off by a fish. Because you don't want that in your mind when you're at a... Like, don't go Chessington World of Adventures.
No.
And then, if you wash your dick. Sorry, I was on the edge.
Yeah.
I was on the edge. Hygiene and fun should nary mix.
All the things you have to put out of your mind when you go to a swimming pool are things like, this has just got people's mangled feet in this pool.
And their genitals.
Foot skin, genitals. Verrucas.
Anus.
Okay.
Yeah. Anus. What if the anus is relaxing?
Getting the bombs out.
Well, your anus is in your trunk.
What
trunks.
Did you do,
still
Wet Waddy? Is that why you had to leave early?
They chucked me
They're
out.
They're very strict over there.
Well, get out! You gotta respect our traditions.
Why did you put the fish up there?
Respect our traditions. Sorry, I forgot it's an Arab nation. Not even that. Just human traditions. You know, don't do that to one of our foot fish. Yeah, no, they chucked me out. I had a nice time though. All said and done.
It does sound like it.
That's why I recommend, and now I'm the new ambassador for Wet Waldy. Listen, we can't talk about this all day. Not when we've got one of your great heroes, a man who changed the face of British football.
Yes.
Mostly because on his own face, he had one of them Britney Spears mics for a minute there, like he wore. Yep. He did that. Mm. He was very much an innovator. Well, tell me why, before we introduce him, tell me why you love Phil Brown.
Well, I just think he's an incredibly charismatic personality.
And so am I.
Yeah, it's not a comparison.
Oh, sorry.
He got us promoted to the Premier League. Did you?
No. I wasn't able. My team's floundered in the lower reaches of League One. Didn't even get to the professional flight.
And I'd say in coming up, we played a very exciting kind of brand of football, the mixture of personalities, Dean Wind. I mean, we'll get into it in a minute.
All right, shall we?
Yeah, sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to our show. This is a great honour for Gareth as a Hull fan and me as a football fan. And for you as an American, you're probably confused, but you're going to have to bloody well learn to lump it. And welcome Phil Brown. All right, Phil.
How are you?
Really good, mate. Really good. How are you getting on?
Well, I've been listening to you guys for the last half an hour and I'm fascinated. It's a brilliant show, by the way. Superb.
Thanks, mate. Thanks. You still look well handsome.
I've just come off the golf course, Russell. I'm just getting my handicap down.
Where are you living?
I'm in Oxfordshire. I was on, I was managing Southend for the second time around, and I got the call from Swindon. Halfway across was Oxfordshire, and I just stopped in the Cotswolds and decided to build a house and a life there. Beautiful.
So what's going on now? What are you doing? Like, where are you managing?
I'm not managing at the moment. I'm doing majority of my work is with the BBC and with the Indian Super League. You know, I'm going across there for their 10th season next year. They're coming up slowly but sure in terms of the rankings. You know, the world rankings. They're hopefully going to qualify for a World Cup in the next 4 years, if not 8 years. So there's a lot of input with regards to British footballers going over there and British managers, more importantly. When I'm back home, I'm working for the BBC, Radio 5. Just keeping my eye in, waiting for the next job coming along.
Global game's changing a lot. We're sort of fascinated by what's happening in the MLS and the unique deal that was put together for Lionel Messi. Like, he was paid by the league, he was paid by the sponsors, he was paid by the broadcasters. We're obviously fascinated by, as the world is, by what's happening in Saudi Arabia and the kind of complexity about that. Like, you know, that we're territorial and think like, oh, the Premier League's got to be the best league in the world. Do similar, prejudices, you might call them, exist about Indian football? Is the game popular over there? I've always thought that, like, it's a cricketing nation primarily. How is the nation of India taking to football?
Well, strangely enough, Russell, when I went across there about 4 years, 5 years ago as a manager, manager a team called Pune City, which is a suburb of Mumbai. But you're talking about a suburb of Mumbai. It takes about 2 hours to fly there, let alone, you know, it's a big old place, you know. And then I managed Hyderabad, which was, again, just a selling of a franchise, you know, and you move to another area and it's another 3-4 hours away. But it's such a big place, such a vast place as well, 1.4 billion, but 95% love cricket. So you're up against it. And I've never been in that prejudiced world of being second, if not third, if not fourth in terms of league, in terms of, you know, the rankings of how popular you are. So it was a real tough gig when I went over there. And one of the biggest clangers I dropped was when I was speaking to the Times of India. First interview, I just said, when an Indian boy or girl is born, I want to put a football in the hand instead of a cricket ball. Well, there was absolute carnage, backlash, you name it. So it was a difficult gig, there's no doubt about it. But from a football perspective, you know, the teams are improving. You know, Simon Grayson has just gone across there, who's well-renowned in England in terms of, managed probably 7, 8, 9 clubs in England. He's gone across there and did a great job at Bengaluru. And he's staying there for the next year. So hopefully he builds that brand and the club gets bigger and hopefully the whole Indian gig gets bigger and they can win a World Cup at one stage.
Gareth, our co-host and producer, loves you because he's a Hull fan. He loves you for bringing Hull up. The rest of us fans of the game love you for some of the unique moments you brought to the top flight. You know what I'm going to be talking about. I'm going to be talking about the serenade, the on-pitch halftime team talk. I'm going to be talking about that kind of stuff. But I'm going to hand over now to Gareth so that he can get all excited and hysterical about you. Gareth, please meet Phil Brown.
Oh, Phil, it's an absolute joy to meet you. I mean, Russell's right. You are a hero to me, and thanks for making me one of the happiest people in the world in 2008. It was an incredible day, an incredible season, and Russell was just asking me beforehand about why you're, I guess, so special to so many Hull fans. I think it was a lot about the way we came up rather than just that it was the first time we'd ever been in the Premier League. So I just want to ask you, in terms of, I would say, you know, you have legendary status along with Peter Taylor and Steve Bruce. What's it kind of like to go from, I don't know, assistant manager under Allardyce and then having, I guess, aspirations of becoming a first team manager and then the kind of things that you achieved at Hull to then, obviously, you know, you've managed other places. I know you had success at Southend, but in the way that, I guess footballers, there must always be a bit of a struggle when it comes to kind of retirement from the game. What's it like for you as a manager to go from that huge, as I say, legendary status at Hull to having different kind of experiences elsewhere that maybe don't hit the kind of heights that you've had previously?
Well, thanks first and foremost for the introduction, Gareth. And yes, I did really enjoy my time at Hull City, there's no doubt about it. But I'm sort of in that frame of mind, if you like, where you're talking about the levels that you reach in terms of management, the levels that you reach in terms of coaching and playing. And, that, you know, to be an electrician back in, whoa, it's 1979-80, and you go from that to going into the game. So you're on the terraces first and foremost as a supporter. And that's the most important part. You know, when I heard you and Russell talk, and Russell's a supporter at West Ham, I believe. You know, when you're on the terraces and you start feeling and believing and seeing things that you can actually support, you support it in different ways. You support it by finances. You support it by being there through thick and thin. You support it by eventually crossing the white line and becoming a footballer. If eventually for your own team, that's fantastic. If it's not, then you've got to still give that level of commitment to whoever you're playing for, whoever you're coaching, whoever you're managing. And that's fortunately what I was born with. I think my parents are responsible for that. But the commitment levels when I was chucked in at any football club was 100% full on. And you got the real Phil Brown, as it were, whether that was charismatic to some supporters and not to others. It doesn't matter to me. I was just trying to be me. And trying to be me was that supporter blessed with a little bit of talent that I could play, then blessed with a little bit of talent that I could then coach, and then a little bit of talent that I could manage. To get Hull City to the Premier League was just a great achievement, but it wasn't me, it was everybody. We were all, it was a combined effort on all fronts, and I mean that so much. I mean, I used to go into the schools in Hull, in Humberside, and to understand the people of Humberside was the most important part. For me to understand that, it was almost three generations of deprivation where the fishing industry in the 12-mile radius had brought Hull to a standstill. And it was great listening to you guys talking about Yorkshire. Is it Yorkshire? Is it the Ridings? Is it, you know, is it Humberside? What is it? And you have that sense of belonging because you have an area where you support your team through thick and thin. And once you get that, I think you can take anybody anywhere, as long as you have buy-in from everybody. And I thought we had buy-in from every person I spoke to, whether it was a child going into the schools, whether it was a retired grandfather who had been in the shipyards or in the ships 25, 30 years ago, whether it be women, children, didn't matter who it was. We just had buy-in from everybody.
Do you mind if I just ask one more? Because I completely agree with you. And I really think that promotion to the Premier League obviously would gone up in the previous few seasons and that meant a lot to the city. But I think the promotion to the Premier League after decades and decades of being the butt of jokes of the city, obviously we're the second most bombed city after London in the war. You know, this is a city you know, this is a city that needed something good to happen to it. And it literally, I think, put Hull on the map. And for the people of Hull to be seeing their team on match of the day, to be in the Premier League, I think was just one of the biggest things to happen to the city ever. So I agree with you. I think buying into how much of a difference it made to the people of Hull just through football, I think is an incredible thing.
Two things from my perspective, Gareth. One, your facial expression talking to me compared to your facial expression talking to Russell. You are so serious. You are so into Hull, and then you enter the comedy side of things. And the face is brilliant, absolutely fantastic. But it's a true story. And Russell, being a West Ham supporter, you'll know what I mean. Man of the people and all that. You've got to really buy into the way people are in the area. And I remember, remember the Duke of Northumberland? I think the Duke of Cumberland pub in North Ferriby. I used to live in North Ferriby, and when I finished a game, I used to go in there for a pint and then go home. And I went in this pub this time, and I had all my family with me. And there was a big, strong-looking, strapping lad, Hull City fan, tattoos, HUFC on his hands, you know, proper supporter. And he came straight over to me, and he was in my face. Stop staring at my wife. Stop staring at my wife. And I thought, what do I do with this? What do I do with this? So I looked at him, and I went, I ain't looking at your wife. And I had to be careful, because if I wasn't looking at his wife, why is she not? Is she not good looking? Is she? You know what I mean? That kind of crack. And he went, hold on a second. I'm just joking. You have brought pride back to this football club. I like to have a fight, an organised fight before a game of football. And whatever city I walk into, we couldn't walk in with any pride whatsoever, because we were bottom of this league, we were bottom of that league. You put the pride in me walking back into any pub now, a Hull City supporter, and putting a, you know, like putting an organised fight on. I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. I've supported Sunderland all my life. Organised fighting. I just had nothing to do with it. I was just there on the terraces trying to make as much noise as I possibly can. But therein lies a story where West Ham's concerned. They like the organised fight as well, didn't they?
Phil Brown there restoring pride to the hooligans of Hull so that his Macam kin can get beaten up on Derby Day with real pride and force. One of the things that comes across right clear from you, Phil, is that connection is what's important to you. Connection to the fans, connection to your players. And I liked those moments where you took unusual choices and unusual risks that I imagine came from the fact that you're a person from a normal background, a football fan yourself, a football man, as they say, to use the famous phrase. And I feel that it's beautiful to experience the as a fan and as a viewer, the success that you achieved with Hull, and also that you've stayed connected to your relationship to fans, as the last story demonstrates. Is it also true that as a Sparky, you still use your electrician skills even when you was managing Southend to fix the electrics? Is that true?
Russ, listen, true story. We're playing Millwall. It's an FA Cup. I think Millwall might have been two divisions above us. They were definitely Championship. We were in the first or the second division. And it was a massive game. We had about 11, 12,000 at the game. They had 2,500 travelling fans, which wasn't too far away, Millwall at Southend. Anyway, it was a proper game of football. 20 minutes into the game, we're 1-0 up. And there's a power failure. The lights come off, and we're looking around and trying to find out what the reason is. Now I'm looking to my right-hand side, knowing full well the ground and how it was built, et cetera, et cetera. I used to walk around the ground on a Friday before a game when it was empty and just get a feel for the vibe. And you know, it doesn't matter where you are. The old grounds have still got, they're breathing. Even when they're empty, they're breathing. They've got history. They've got, it's beautiful to be involved in that. So I used to go, it was part of my job, to walk around the grounds, wherever, whichever club I was at, on a Friday, and you'd maybe hear the grass being cut and this, that, and the other. There was a couple of people, maintenance people working, and I used to find out where the cable used to come in, how the lights were, you know, built and this, that, and the other. Anyway, the lights have gone out. It's about 15 minutes delay, and I'm standing on the touchline, which is an elevated grass pitch, and my chairman, Ron Martin, taps me on the shoulder, and I spin round thinking it's the referee or something like that. I spin round, it's the chairman. He went, Brownie, he said, you used to be an electrician, didn't you? And I went, yes, I did. He said, you couldn't find out what the problem is. So I went down, and it was a fuse had gone. So eventually we fixed the fuse, and I put it back in, and they come round, and I look on the pitch, and I'm looking at the lights, and the lights are not coming on. And they're all looking at me as if I'm some kind of useless electrician. But it wasn't. They were halogen lights. And when a halogen light goes off. You have to wait till it calms down. So it cools down first before it sparks up again. So when I fixed this fuse, it was a 10-15 minute period of the, you know, bulb cooling down and then sparking up. Before you know it, sparking, going all over the place. Next thing you know, the lights are on. We win the game.
Yes!
We beat Millwall 4-1. We get to the next round of the cup, and I think we played Hull, actually, in the next round of the cup.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. You brought back the light to Roots Hall. You beat Millwall. What a fantastic story. Which is Gareth ain't even the only Hull fan in this building. So when you're like talking in the gallery, we've got Ed, who also works here, who's from Hull, sort of just like nodding and wiping away the occasional tear. We want to sort of take it to an even higher sentimental plane by showing this moment where you serenaded the crowd there after avoiding relegation in 2009. Let's have a look at that together. Beautiful. Wow. Electrician, singer, football manager. And what an array of skills.
And sending Newcastle down as well. I mean, that must have been amazing.
We did the Great North Run. All of the backroom staff did the Great North Run that year. And obviously, it's from Newcastle to South Shields. I was born and bred in South Shields. So I'm running 13 mile for charity. There was six or seven of the backroom staff. And we've all got Hull City tops on. Just made all my backroom staff do it. It was just a brilliant day. But little did I know, that year we sent down not just Newcastle, we sent Middlesbrough down as well. Sunderland survived, but we sent two North East teams down. It wasn't a nice place to be.
No.
I was spat at many a time.
Yeah, you could have maybe done that run in maybe a costume, like Honey Monster or Mr. Blobby or something, a little bit sensible.
Or maybe Elvis.
Yeah, something like that. And then you can bring the crooning back into it. I think what you are able to embody and bring the spirit of is the thing that this podcast and aspect of our show is actually about. That football creates a sense of unity and celebrates aspects of a culture that are pretty easy to malign and dismiss. I think the kind of populist politics that have emerged in the last 10, 20 years are kind of as a result of the ongoing malignment of particular communities and members of that community. And being like a man of the north of England, being from the class that you're evidently from, it's beautiful to hear the way that you can represent that community positively and the way that the game offers an opportunity to show unity, good spirits, joy. It's interesting to see the national game become increasingly international and yet increasingly commodified. Phil, do you sometimes feel that the game that we are celebrating in this kind of conversation will be lost as it becomes increasingly corporatized? I'm thinking about like the idea that, you know, that the manager's walking around the ground, knows who the maintenance staff are, and if the halogen lights go down, might be asked to pop into the basement and change a views. I mean, that's unlikely to happen at the Etihad, or, you know, like, I don't reckon Pep Guardiola.
He can do a lot of things, Pep.
Pep, the sprinklers ain't working. Mm. I don't know what to do. It's not my problem. Like, it's not something that you're imagining. Do you ever wonder if the essence of the game could be lost in its increasing commercialization?
There is a worry, of course, the size of the game. I'm going back to the day when I used to stand on the terraces and watch Sunderland. Did I know who the manager was? Did I know who the owners were? You'd no idea at the time. You were just a kid on the terraces watching a game of football. You knew the team. You knew the team inside out. I was very fortunate that I was at Wembley for the 1973 Cup Final against Leeds. And I remember Jimmy Montgomery presenting me with a trophy when I was at school. And that gave me the impetus, the excitement, the drive to actually eventually become a pro footballer. Double save against Leeds United, winning 1-0, Ian Porterfield scoring a goal. All of these things were part and parcel, but I didn't know who the manager was until the crazy lunatic runs across the pitch, runs past the captain, runs past the goal scorer, and all he wants to do is embrace the goalkeeper, Jimmy Montgomery, and that was Bob Stockwell. And that was my first recollection of who the manager was and what he then went on to do and where he went after that, you know. So all of them things, I think the game's progressed in a real positive way, no doubt about it, until the moment that the Premier League was invented and then it became this global icon. I was just thinking about this before I came on the show today. You know, when we first started, in was it 92, 93, 93, 94? The Premier League, you had Sir Alex Ferguson there at the helm, and he drove it basically from a management perspective. But the Premier League itself was only, I think it was about 60, 65% British players, but that's been squeezed the other way now. It's probably more or less 75% foreign players, foreign ownership, but that doesn't make it any worse or better. That just makes it a global brand. I think the British are still hanging in there, but you have to. You really have to. You know, you've got to have your managers like your Davy Moyes that is doing a great job at West Ham. If West Ham could have gone down this year and won a European title, that would have been scandalous from what Davy Moyes has done in the game. You know, son of Sir Alex Ferguson, if you like, to a certain extent, you know, he got the baton at Manchester United, and then did it fail, or was it just too big a club? Is West Ham a right fit for him? All of them things, I think, are in place. Sam Allardyce, you know, in 8 or 9 Premier League clubs. You've got father figures, in my opinion, that are setting a great example to me and now the up-and-coming breed of young coaches. Am I lost to the game now? I don't think so. I think the game is played in a wonderful way, fantastic way. And hats off to Pep Guardiola. Hats off to Man City for the way they've produced a great team. But if you look at what Pep Guardiola's done, he brought in a number 9, a proper old-fashioned number 9. When everybody was buying false 9s, no 9s, they were playing 3 up front, they were doing all sorts of things that Man City were doing 5 years ago. He then brings in Haaland, who then scores 48 goals or whatever it was, wins 3 trophies, and he's gone back to the number 9. But if you look at the 4 semi-finalists in the Champions League, all 4 of them had big number 9s. So it's just cycles, Russell, what I'm trying to say, Gareth. You know, it's just becoming cycles. And you've just got to hang in there. You've got to make sure that you keep on believing yourself, believing what you believe in, and it comes round again.
Beautiful, Dad. You said a lot there, mate, because I think that one of the things that I was fascinated to hear that you didn't even used to think of who the manager was. And I was trying to think of, like, you know, when I started to really think about West Ham, I was probably like 10, 11. It was like the 86 side, John Lyle. But the players then were like Cotty and McAvennie. And McAvennie had all this allure and glamour and craziness around him. He was my sort of first favourite footballer. But as I've gone on to watch the game more, if not understand it with any more depth, I've become increasingly interested in the managers, and you said yourself, because they become kind of like father figures, leaders. That's what you're really, I believe at least, that we're looking at is models of leadership. And how is it that a particular manager can transform the fortunes of a club? How is it that you can captivate a city, a town, a nation through charisma, through will, through sort of cunning and guile? Football provides so many ways of understanding things that elsewise might be difficult to observe. Leadership, community, loss, competition, injustice, hypocrisy, rules. I mean, there's so much in there. So it's lovely to see that you watch the game and experience the game in the same way.
I think when you go back to my time in schools, and I think what an example, what a great opportunity, first and foremost, to go into schools to give somebody. I've just been into a local school here, and I sat down in front of 25, 30 kids, and it was, you know, sharing your experiences, and they're asking you questions, and they're drilling into you almost like an interview you're doing after a game, you know, when you get reporters trying to trip you up and say the wrong thing and this and the other. Kids are just brutally honest. They're coming out with, so tell me. And it was like sharing your ideas. So I had to bring me trophies in. I brought a picture of when the Queen visited Hull. I was managing the team in the Premier League, so I managed to sit at the table of the Queen. I'm an electrician. Who am I? I'm sitting at a table with the Queen having lunch. I just couldn't believe how far the game had took me, how far Hull City had took me. And I'm just asking questions. Why don't you go to the FA Cup final anymore? You know, I'm giving a not stick, but why don't you go to the NBA? You were a leader for me. I wanted to go to the FA Cup final because you were sitting there and you were handing the trophy out. I wanted to be a winner at Wembley because you were handing the trophy out. Then it became the siblings and you didn't want it as much. That can't happen. You know, you've got to have your your values, I think. You've got to have your icons. You've got to have your people that you aspire to. And I think that's where it starts at school.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Bloody hell, Phil. You're a fantastic interview, mate. You're a good chat. Thank you so much. I think we could carry on talking to you forever. Maybe not Gareth. He's all stumbling over himself, pulling at his collar, sweating, getting all fretful. Probably wants your autograph and a photograph and stuff like that. It's been such a joy.
Maybe we can do a follow-up interview at some point, Phil.
What, just the two of you? Yeah, yeah. Don't even want to film it.
Maybe a private phone chat or something. Who knows?
We'll all become mates. We'll all become mates.
Only if Russell wears the Hull City top.
Yes.
I would do that for you, Gareth. Yes. That's the simple truth of the matter. I'd do it for you and Phil quite happily. Easily put aside my allegiance to the claret and blue louts of East London just for a moment. Phil, bringing about a dream of one young man from Hull meeting his hero. Phil, thank you so much, mate. You've really elevated our show today. You're brilliant. I hope we get to chat again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, bless you. Bye-bye, Phil.
Cheers, Phil.
It's a bit emotional points, isn't it? Because it's sort of like he's so sort of straightforward and lovely. Thank you so much. That was a lovely little conversation with Phil Brown. Did you enjoy it, mate?
He's an incredibly authentic personality.
He's for real, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think
we could do more with Phil Brown. What do we do with Phil Brown? Yeah, bring him in down here. Let's get him in here.
Yeah.
It's not even far.
Not that far.
Let's bring Phil Brown to town will come.
Let's do it. Of course he will.
What was your first question about it? It took so long. And then you basically ended up saying,
I knew I won't get that
man in decline.
I knew I'd only get
Why did you ask that? You went like, is it good when he was old? But now what? You should have like left it when it was at Hull. Tell us about your best bits of being a Hull manager.
No, because I was thinking.
Luckily, Phil's a pro.
As he was talking, I was thinking, what must it be like to have. To experience that as a manager. But then when he was talking about, you know, going to India and this, that, it must be difficult. I think it must be difficult. And I wanted to make sure he knew what a legend I thought he was. So I was trying to get a few questions into one. But yeah.
That's what I try and do. It's my technique. Doesn't really work. But it's all we've got, gal. Listen, that's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for joining us. Football is nice. We'll, of course, be back next week.